Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.
Not in a Creepy Way. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is brother Jay.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 1985 movie The Falcon and the Snowman, directed by John Schlesinger from Pacific Heights and Marathon Man.
Oh, that explains a great deal.
So, this was on your list, Brother Jay. Had you seen it before?
Yeah, I have.
Okay, cool.
I remembered it being a very different movie than what I watched.
Different tone-wise, you mean?
I just clearly didn't remember major parts of the movie. So, I kept expecting parts to happen that didn't. So, I clearly have mixed this in my mind with another movie. Another spy thriller movie. I don't know which one. So, there is another spy thriller movie that I can't remember that there's pieces, parts of that are not in this movie. So there's another movie out there that I haven't seen that I'm still trying to go back and see. And it wasn't this one.
Well, I'm happy to talk spy thriller movies with you. So while Drew and I are tackling the Fast and Furious movies, if you want to stack up the calendar with spy movies, that's great. Not spy movies, but like thriller movies.
I'll have to find them. I mean, mine was, it was specifically a spy thriller movie that I remember. It wasn't this movie, but I have seen this movie before, but I suspect I saw it like on TV.
Yeah, I remember this being a, like a featured movie on the premium cable of our youth, of 1985.
That would be about right.
I think this was on cable, or in our case, satellite TV. All the time.
That would make sense.
And I think it was probably more of a prestige picture than it is today. Like, high-minded.
It looks like a made-for-TV movie, though.
Yeah, yeah.
It very much looks like it shot like a TV movie. The soundtrack is TV movie. The acting is TV movie. It's a very kind of... And it may have just been the sign of the times being in the mid-80s, but it was a very, it was just a very TV look feel.
Oh, I agree.
And it was a TV movie plot.
Well, it's a true story.
It is.
Roughly.
Yes.
How much of the true story did you know?
None of it.
Do you know what happened after the movie ends?
I know. I saw a picture of them recently together.
Okay. Well, when we get to the end of the movie, I want to let you guys know what I found, because I'm like, huh, these guys were in jail. I wonder what happened. Because I wasn't sure how I felt about them at the end of this movie. I know how I feel about them now. At least one of them. But anyway. So I had not seen it until last week.
Oh, all right.
It was always hanging around the outskirts.
Well... And I don't think I understood it when I watched it, because I would have been all of like 10, 11 years old. So, you know, I don't know that I understood any of what was going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I have the ability now to put myself in a different mindset when I watch this movie, and I definitely have feelings about this movie. Knowing that it's a it's loosely based on a true story.
Yeah, I have feelings too, for sure. Opinions, definitely.
You don't say.
Yeah. So, shall we dive in?
Yeah.
Okay. The movie opens with Christopher Boyce, played by Timothy Hutton, and we know Timothy Hutton from Beautiful Girls, The Ghost Writer, and he won an Oscar for Ordinary People.
It had a really long open.
Yeah, he is a young seminarian. I'll just let that word hang around. He leaves his religious studies and returns to his family home in Rancho Palos Verdes, an affluent peninsula in Southern California. He reunites with his friend from childhood, Dalton Lee, played by Sean Penn from Milk, among other things.
It is affluent code for white?
Well, also rich. Oh, but okay. Yeah, it's also code for white. The first thing that struck me watching this movie is how young Sean Penn looked.
Well, how young Timothy Hutton looked.
Well, Timothy Hutton hasn't really changed much. I mean, granted, you know, Sean Penn, you know, he's lived some life.
Boyfriend Jesse said, has he ever looked good?
Well, that's the thing. Actually, I think maybe in Fast Times in Ridgemont High was the most.
Ooh.
That was as close as he got to the matinee idol. I mean, he was never going to be. He was never going to be Timothy Hutton.
No.
No. Which is fine.
I mean, he did good as Milk.
It turns out he's a good actor.
Mm-hmm.
So I have feelings about these characters, maybe, because even though, I mean, we were certainly, you know, middle class. We were not Rancho Palos Verdes folks. But these guys were some fucking entitled white guys. Granted, it's 1985, so we get it. You know, whatever. There's not any people of color in this movie. Well, there is one, but that's about one. About it. Until we go south of the border. Anyway, okay. So, sorry. I'll go back to the plot and we'll go from there. So, Dalton Lee, Sean Penn, he is a drug smuggler and dealer, and he's in trouble with the law. So he's kind of a wheeler dealer kind of guy. These guys aren't far out of college. These guys are early 20s, right?
Yeah.
Or maybe out of high school in Dalton's thing. I don't know what kind of college education he has, but Timothy Hutton's character, well, maybe he went directly into the seminary or something, but he was going to go to law school. That was one of his thoughts. But these folks are from rich families. Anyway, so maybe I didn't like them just because they were some spoiled, self-entitled rich kids. But that's okay. So that's the stage. One is going to join the church. The other is going to join, is a drug dealer. But they're still friends because they were altar boys together. And, Timothy Hutton has a falcon. And he participates in the sport of falconry, which maybe I have mixed feelings about.
I was going to say, it seems like the most white, pretentious thing ever.
Oh, for certain. Well, it's like fencing. It's like, yeah. you'll put your falcon, you put your hawk in your bird cage next to your fencing supplies and your polo mallets. Now, I hate to, again, it's not fair, although these are characters. And it turns out they're both criminals, so I don't feel bad about talking bad about them. So. If you're listening, Christopher Boyce, I'm only... I have no opinions on you personally until we get past the movie part of it. Everything I'm talking about now is just your portrayal in the movie, which I am sure you are not 100% on board with your portrayal in this movie. So Dalton's a drug smuggler, and he's the sort of ne'er-do-well friend of Chris's. And he asked Chris to partner with him in the drug business. But Chris isn't interested in that. He's not going to be a drug dealer. Now, Dalton's parents are Richard Dysart from The Thing and L.A. Law. Love
him. Yeah.
And Priscilla Pointer from A Nightmare on Elm Street 3 Dream Warriors, Carrie and Looking for Mr. Goodbar. And his younger brother is Chris Makepeace from Meatballs and My Bodyguard. Like, that guy was, he was on the road to being, well, what, Timothy Hutton. But sort of stalled out after My Bodyguard, right? I mean, maybe he's super successful in other reasons, but I just remember him from this period of movies, and that's it. But he had a good run. Meatballs, I mean, you know.
Really?
Oh, he was a main character.
No, but main character or not.
Well, Meatballs was a wildly successful movie, whether you liked it or not, I mean.
Okay.
That Chris Makepeace could have easily been in the Matt Dillon camp. Had things gone a slightly different direction. Like he was set up to be the next Matt Dillon, for instance.
Hmm. Okay.
Of course, Matt Dillon didn't even become Matt Dillon I guess he's always been that. I don't know. Sorry. I'm a little drifty tonight.
You're all over the place, man.
I am all over the place. Yeah, sorry. Okay, so back. Sorry. Again, Chris Makepeace does a fine job in this movie, but he's not in it very much. So why am I talking so much about him?
I think you have some secret deep love for him, apparently.
I just like
or Meatballs.
Chris Makepeace? And I haven't seen Meatballs since I saw it as a kid in watching it on cable.
Could be an Aboriginal name, Native American name.
It could have been, yes. So, the Boyce family consists of Charlie Boyce, Chris's father, Pat Hingle, who is Commissioner Gordon in the 1989 Batman and all of the early 90 Batmans.
Ah, that's where I recognized him from.
Very familiar face.
Very. He's been in tons of stuff.
And his mother is Joyce Van Patten from Monkey Shines, Marley and Me, San Elmo's Fire, The Bad News Bears, and I'm sure she's a member of the Van Patten family in some way.
Well, she's a member of some Van Patten
family. Was she married to Dick Van Patten? I'm guessing that. I could be wrong, but that would make sense, right?
Yeah, I'm going to look. Hang on. So, oh my gosh. So the most current movie that she starred in 2019 was Alzheimer's.
Oh no. Hey, but I mean, she's been a working actress since The Bad News Bears to 2019. That's pretty fucking amazing.
Joyce and her equally famous older brother, Dick Van Patten.
Oh, wow. Okay. I was wrong.
Yeah, but she's got TV credits back to 1948. Oh, she was on As the World Turns.
Probably as a baby or something, right? 1948.
Yeah, I don't know.
No, well, maybe that she was on a show that started in 1948.
No, yeah, no. She was on a show in 1948, but As the World Turns in 56. She was on a couple of TV series. Actually, a lot of TV series.
She's done a ton of TV.
Yeah, it looks like episodic. Like, she was just like...
actors here and there.
Yeah. It just because it's always like one episode here, one episode there, one episode here. A lot.
For her.
Yeah, she just had like one-offs until Hawaii 5-0, where she had a couple episodes, and that was in 72. Mannix. Love American Style. She was in a bunch of those episodes. Let's see what else. Now come into the 70s, the Rockford Files, the Martian Chronicles in the 80s. She was in St. Elmo's Fire. How about that?
Yeah.
So she's done a ton of stuff.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Up to, like I said, Marley and Me, Monkey Shines, Bad News Bears. The Bad News Bears with a young child, Jodie Foster, right? Or was that Tatum O'Neal?
I think it was Tatum O'Neal.
Maybe. Well, Walter Matthau. An old Walter Matthau, because he's always been an old Walter Matthau.
He was born old.
Yes.
They remade Bad News Bears, really?
Oh, yeah.
They made a TV series of Bad News Bears?
Of course.
Yeah, it was Walter Matthau and Tatum O'Neal.
Okay. Not Jodie Foster. I'm thinking of Freaky Friday.
But Joyce Van Patten and Vic Morrow.
Excellent.
Hmm. All right. Anyway, we digress.
We definitely dun, da, da, da. Do. Okay. So, Chris's father, Charlie, pulls strings to get Chris a job at RTX, a large telecommunication company.
And who is RTX supposed to represent? Do you know?
I think it's like, what, TRX or something?
TRW.
TRW. Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. TRW. That's a known name.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Still around, I believe.
Probably. So Chris's polite nature and obvious intelligence at work bring him to the attention of executives Larry Rogers, played by Macon McElman from Deliverance and Smoking the Bandit, Tony Owens, who's played by Jeffrey Harden from he's Deep Throat in the X-Files, and then Pacific Heights in Cujo, and Eddie, who's Nicholas Pyre from Pacific Heights and Risky Business. These are the old white guys who work for, and basically, RTX is a telecommunications company, but it's also a defense contractor. This is back in the days where they have teletypes. Did you ever have a teletype in any office that you worked in?
Yes, there was one in the, when I worked for the trust fund.
Yeah, just brings me back.
It was giant. it was in a huge cabinet, and it had a big like hotel lobby bell that would go off right before it started typing. And if I was alone in the office doing filing on the weekends, it would scare the crap out of me, because it would just be like this huge ding, and then it would just start like, you know, it has that very characteristic noise, because the typesetter is just, you know, it's just like wham, wham, wham. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's basically the bridge between literally the telegraph and email.
Well, it's basically a IBM Selectric typewriter with the ball typeset that's just on speed.
No photos or anything. This wasn't a fax machine.
No.
Strictly text.
Just text.
Yeah. But it's also, you know, one of the ways to get information around the world.
Quickly.
Mm-hmm. So, and also working at the hotel, we could do it for guests, but it was very expensive for the guests to do it. So I imagine it was fairly costly to do. Like the charges for sending messages were probably pretty high. You didn't get a bunch of free texts per
you didn't have a plan with your sat phone or your car phone.
Oh my God, yeah, exactly. Oh, remember Jim Rockford had a car phone? Crazy.
Those were the days.
Yeah. But the opening to the Rockford Files was, of course, the answer machine message, which is brilliant because it changed every episode. Like, I love that sort of detail. Like, there are some TV shows where the opening credits are just fantastic. I'm thinking of things like 6 Feet Under or Dexter, ones that are just, well, like even ER has a nice, like, opening credit sequence. But it doesn't change very often. Maybe, like, once every couple of years, maybe. Maybe once a year, tops. They change the opening to Rockford Files every episode.
Kind of like The Simpsons.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so, sorry. Back to the movie. Chris, basically, being a young kid, also his dad, you know, recommended for him for the job, and so his dad's friends are the bosses over there, and he is a clean-cut, upstanding, former seminarian, right? Smart guy.
Seeming, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what they're trying to portray him as, a very buttoned-down, proper, straightforward, kind of just man of the times.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he's a company man.
Well, and he's a little bit adrift because he's just quit the seminary, and it's never explained why or anything. So he's just kind of trying to feel out what he's going to do with the rest of his life, since things didn't go well there for whatever reason. But he passes his security background check, which is basically his like his best employable skill at this point, is the fact that he can pass his background check, which is great. So then he's assigned to the Vault, a classified area of RTX that is responsible for transmitting encrypted messages among CIA agencies worldwide. Chris soon learns that he and his fellow Vault employees, Lori, Maddie Kaplan, and Jean Dorian Harewood. Do you remember the movie that Dorian Harewood was in recently that we saw? Not a recent movie, but one we recently talked about?
No.
He was the guy that didn't get the apartment.
In Pacific Heights. Oh. Huh, that's interesting. I knew
it's because, you know, he's certainly charming. I'm like, where have I seen that face before?
Because he was the cop.
Yes. But yeah, so they have their little secret workplace that they're the only ones that had the clearance to come in there. So nobody really bothers them because they can't. So they do things like use their gigantic paper shredder to mix cocktails, which to me seems bad for drinking and also bad for equipment. But hey, it worked for the movie.
I'm like, that would be some pulpy, inky grossness.
Oh, it would smell. I mean, it would be the worst.
Yeah, you'd have fruit flies. California has fruit flies, man.
Yeah. Well, it turns out...
Vault or not.
If you pour margarita mix or Bloody Mary mix into your shredder, you'll have fruit flies too.
Ugh.
So they play board games. They drink alcohol. It's 1985, so everybody's just smoking at their desks. And, you know, they're kind of goofing off, but they're doing their paper-pushing work, right? So... in the RTX vault, Chris reads some of the CIA transmissions. He gets one from Australia, specifically, that was sent in error. So, he ends up reading more of these, and he talks to Eddie, and he has learned that the CIA infiltrated Australian labor unions to the CIA's benefit. So Chris is venting to his friend Dalton, the drug dealer, of course, that he thinks it's wrong for the CIA to get involved in these dirty dealings against an ally. And he suggests to Dalton that they steal top secret documents from the vault, and that Dalton deliver the documents to the Russian embassy in Mexico. So Chris has decided, not only does he not like this, his solution to the problem is to steal U.S. secrets and give them to the Russians.
Yeah, I don't understand the leap from point A to point B.
Yeah. I mean, the stated goal would be to just to weaken the American intelligence community by exposing this stuff. But he's not deep throat, right? He's not taking it to a journalist, which means he's also not WikiLeaks. Although WikiLeaks is different because WikiLeaks, theoretically, you're leaking it to everyone. But if you took it to a journalist, right, then you would be a whistleblower, also completely illegal what you'd be doing, but you could claim that you were doing some sort of good.
You could attempt to shield yourself somehow.
Yeah, or at least convince yourself that you're not a bad guy.
But this, he was actually selling secrets, which is absolutely, that's, you know, at least WikiLeaks, ostensibly, you're not getting any monetary benefit out of it directly.
No, this guy is actually a, should be convicted of espionage and executed, perhaps. I mean, that's, you know, treason, right? I mean, I guess it wasn't to overthrow the government, but it certainly was to weaken the government.
Well, I mean, I think that the point could be made, you don't know what it could have accomplished. It could have overthrown the government. He wasn't fully aware of the secrets that he was giving.
But he was willing to give them to our primary foe.
Yes.
Again, we have to remember back to the time when Russia was our primary foe instead of our president's favorite country besides America.
Except it wasn't Russia then.
That's true. Soviet Union.
Yeah.
And it could be argued they're still our foe.
Yes. They are still our foe. At least they're, anyway. Yeah.
From this moment, I thought there was maybe supposed to be some sort of tension in the audience that maybe Chris was doing a bad thing for a good reason, but I don't think the movie made that point. It almost seemed like just Chris was bored and wanted to fuck shit up.
I think they tried to make the point that he felt that the government involvement in things was not appropriate and shouldn't. It was too covert and needed to be public because it wasn't right. And he took a righteous stance on something, but he went about it in a way that didn't abate the problem and didn't directly involve the issue. And in fact, made other issues and he took money for it. So,
well, and he wasn't, I mean, initially what he sent Dalton to the Russians with was not a piece of information like, hey, here's a plan of what we're going to do next week. Instead, he was offering them the codes so they can decrypt all of the transmissions.
Yeah.
So he was giving away the whole store, theoretically, because these are codes that are changed every day. But since he has
master the access. Ciphers.
Yeah. So he could just take him and photocopy him, as it turns out, and send him with this buddy Dalton down to Mexico. And Dalton, from the very beginning, at least how he's portrayed here, is way the fuck over his head. Like, he's going in here sort of like the Ben Affleck character in Good Will Hunting.
Yes.
He is portrayed as kind of a sniveling, cowardly figure. Much less smarter than his friend, but has lots of bravado. It's worth pointing out that when Chris tells his friend Dalton about this, hey, we could make this money and do this thing, and Dalton's like, no, Like, I'm a loyal American. I'm a drug dealer, but I'm a loyal American.
Yeah, yeah. Also, at one point, he's drinking beer and tomato juice.
Yeah, yeah. They did a lot of weird things in the 80s. Yeah. People still like tomato juice. They had the conversation the other day on a podcast about V8. It's like, I will never drink V8. I can't imagine wanting to drink V8. A Bloody Mary to me sounds ridiculous.
V8 is salty and gross. I don't like Bloody Marys either.
I mean, I don't like tomato juice just as a thought. Tomato juice, tomato sauce, tomato paste. If the tomato isn't fairly well cooked or completely raw, I'm not really interested in it. That makes sense. like, give me a pizza sauce. Don't give me just a tomato-y sauce. Like, I want my spaghetti sauce to... I don't eat spaghetti anyway, but if I did, I would want the sauce to be gunked up with as much meat and cheese and stuff as possible.
You don't eat
simple tomato sauce.
You don't eat spaghetti?
No, not really. Never liked it.
Really?
Well, it's because of tomato sauce. And actually, it turns out... Here we go. Turns out it's because of the herb rosemary. One time, Mom and Dad made spaghetti sauce that had rosemary in it.
I think they made pizza sauce is what I think.
Either way.
It was pizza sauce.
Whatever it was, if it wasn't in a jar, I didn't want anything to do with it because of the chance that it's the simple chance rosemary. Because to me, rosemary is like patchouli. Like, I don't want rosemary anywhere near anything I have.
What you're remembering is the homemade pizza sauce.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gag me. Ugh.
So you don't like cilantro
but
either.
Unlike people misunderstand that. Cilantro tastes like soap, but I can eat cilantro. It's not a big deal. Soap tastes fine. I mean, really, I don't want to pour a bunch of Dawn into my mouth, but it's not unpleasant. It's just very distinctive. Rosemary's a bitch. Rosemary's horrible. Like I could.
But you want some Dawn in your mouth?
Exactly. I would rather drink an entire bottle of Dawn than to eat even a tapas dish that has rosemary in it, or sit next to somebody wearing patchouli. It's the same trigger into my brain. Like it hurts my brain when somebody sits next to me wearing patchouli, or I get a big whiff of rosemary.
I never understood patchouli as the pot smoker's cover because patchouli doesn't get rid of the pot smell. You just smell like nasty patchouli and pot. It's like bathroom spray. It doesn't get rid of the ass smell in the bathroom. It's just flowery ass now.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, okay, so
Brother Drew, this is what happens when you leave us alone.
Yeah, exactly. All of a sudden, we're digressing from... So, Dalton, even though he's a patriot, isn't going to fucking, be a spy against his own country. Turns out, he decides this is a better idea because he is he's busted for drugs by the DEA. So, he wants to get out of Dodge. And going to Mexico, well, jumping bail, he's in Mexico, so he can go to the embassy there. No problem. I mean, hey, Lee Harvey Oswald went to Mexico City, and nobody knows about that, right? Super secret. They even reference that in the movie. Yeah, there's photos of Lee Harvey Oswald in the Mexican embassy. Everybody had photos of that because everybody's taking pictures of the Russian embassy.
Imagine that.
Mexican embassy? I mean, Russian embassy in Mexico City. Anyway, so Chris photocopies some classified documents and related to the satellites and codes and gives them to Dalton and tells Dalton never to reveal his name to the Russians, partly to keep his name out of it, but also partly because if the Russians know his name, then why would they need Dalton? Which makes sense.
True story. It's pretty, it's kind of a witty layer of security.
Yeah. Well, also it enables both of them to have a use and therefore the money could be equally shared without any kind of discussion about one's value, maybe. But again, maybe money is not the point because both these guys have more money than they need. Maybe not Dalton, but Chris doesn't need any money.
I don't think he was doing it for the money ostensibly, but I don't think he would have done it if he wasn't going to get paid for it. I think his plan was to get money so that he could pay for college.
Maybe, maybe. On his own or something.
That was the hint that I took from it.
Well,
I'll take this moment to point out that boyfriend Jesse wanted me to say that the character, the actor Dorian Harwood, was also one of the voices for Diablo 3. And he was also, I found out going through IMDb, he was also in plenty of episodes of the TV show Viper.
What was Viper?
Viper, in the near future, an organized crime group known as The Outfit has become a major force in America. Engineer Julian Wilkes develops a high-tech crime-fighting vehicle called the Viper.
Never even heard of it.
The Viper is intended to be a flagship in a new crackdown on crime. The Viper needs a driver, so when Outfit driver Michael Payton is injured and captured, his memory is erased and he's given a new identity.
What era is this?
This would be the 80s, right? 94 to 99.
Wow.
So it was on for 5 years. Wow. Huh. 4 seasons. And of course, the car, you know, the Viper.
Oh, wait, was there a Dodge Viper in the show? 90 would be about right.
Oh, that makes sense. So the co-creator of, oh my God, I just forgot, the Airwolf.
Ah, okay. So instead of a helicopter, they have a Dodge Viper?
Yeah.
Sweet.
Oh man. Yeah, I will.
Hey, say what
will
you want. The Dodge Viper was a cool looking car.
Eh, meh. I mean, it's okay, I guess. It's not my kind of car. But I don't like little teeny tiny death traps anyway, so anyway, digress. So I think Viper was supposed to be like a combo Airwolf Knight Rider thing.
Sweet.
But back to the movie.
Okay, back to the movie. At the Russian embassy in Mexico City, Dalton connects with a middle-aged official, Alex, played by David Suchet, who was from RKO 281, but maybe more notably, he was PBS's, or BBC's maybe, Inspector Poirot.
Hercule Poirot.
So later, Dalton calls Chris at a payphone with the code, "My uncle says hi," which indicates that the Russians were interested in the documents. So inside his apartment, a shaken Chris calls home and speaks briefly to his mother, who is happy to hear from him, and tells him she loves him, but she has to run. Chris decides not to talk to his father, because fathers and sons, blah, blah, blah. So Dalton continues to meet Alex in Mexico City in various locations using spycraft to exchange cash for documents. I think while Drew really appreciates spycraft, the level of spycraft that Dalton does is not up to Drew standards. Having a pocket full of masking tape is, you know, maybe.
But there was a briefcase.
There was a briefcase, and there's going to be a spy camera. So the deals go fairly smoothly at the beginning because they're pretty much trying to get the satellite coordinates and the frequencies that they use and all this other stuff, which Dalton is promising them, but Chris doesn't actually even have. And then Chris meets a young woman, Lana, played by Laurie Singer, the cellist from The Man with One Red Shoe, because she is primarily a cellist. Now, can we talk about Laurie Singer for a second?
Oh my God, she is the worst actress ever.
I feel bad saying that, but she, for someone who is very pretty and an accomplished musician, she can't pull this off.
No.
She's not good.
No, she's not.
She only had one expression.
Clueless?
Just kind of like, huh, she's pretty. That's all you can say about why Chris would be attracted to her. It's unclear why she would be attracted to Chris, except maybe he's got money or something, but not even necessarily because he's living in an apartment. And
I don't know.
It's like they shoehorned that relationship in to make it to because they needed a romantic thing.
I don't think they did. I think this was just a detraction from the story to add some false tension that there didn't need to be. It because she wasn't really all that important. The drama of him kicking her out and all of that, I didn't believe it. I didn't believe their chemistry to begin with. I mean, it was completely, I don't know. It seemed ridiculous. And of course, like her incredulity was,
no, that's the expression the only expression she had was incredulity.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's very one
Lori,
note.
Lori, honey, be incredulous in the scene. Okay. Yeah.
Done.
Yeah, it's her only direction. And again, maybe it's a directing thing, but because I feel bad about talking bad about artists, but it's not. This is not good. Somebody should have an editor or a director or someone else should have made a decision saying, pay her daily rate and let's move on. So we got they're actually successful in their first couple of selling of some stuff, but basically the Russians are still wanting, are after like the big game, and they haven't gotten that yet. But Dalton is he's overconfident. He's also making the Tony Montana mistake of getting high on his own supply. And Chris is upset because it's clear that Dalton's been using heroin. Chris is upset that his drug dealer friend is using drugs.
Yeah, no surprise, you know, huh?
Yes. Kill surprise. Oh. And he's also bragging to people at his house party that he's a spy. I mean, it's the worst.
Also, he breaks out that Minox camera.
Yeah, he's using a spy camera to take pictures at the house party. So, back at RTX, the vault is subject to a security inspection by the NSA with only a minute's notice. So, Chris, Lori, and Gene are frantically working to hide their alcohol empties, their sloppy work, their drugs. But in Chris's case, also evidence of espionage. So, they do find one little security lapse, and that's somebody who left a binder out. And Chris immediately throws Gene under the bus. Because Chris left the binder out, right? Gene didn't do anything.
Yeah, I think Chris is leaving everything out.
Yeah, exactly. He totally threw Gene under the bus.
Yeah.
Chris is not a good guy.
No.
There are no heroes in this story. So Dalton wants to grow the business, but Chris is spooked, if you pardon the pun. And
nice.
Also during this, the binder they left out was this Project Pyramider or something.
Yes.
Which Gene finds out is basically just sort of a bullshit project that never got off the ground, that was probably intentionally sent to their office to see if it would get into the wrong hands.
If it would leak.
Yeah, exactly. Which, you know, if you're getting like that, that's spycraft for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's all bad from Gene's point of view. And Chris is like, yeah, this is out of control. But Dalton's like, no. We're on to big money here. We got to keep doing this. And now when Chris is backing off, Dalton's like, no. We have to continue this. We're getting into the big time. We can even take ourselves out of it and just franchise it out. And if you don't, I'll tell your dad what you've been doing. Also, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Green sunglasses. What the fuck is green sunglasses all about?
I don't know. Were those the blue blockers of the time?
Maybe.
It was probably an 80s thing.
It must have been. So, or no, 70s thing, right?
Because well, I'm just saying 70s, yeah. 80s thing. I mean, it's, you know,
the story takes place in the 70s, but yeah, the movie is 85. So Chris surprises Dalton by showing up at his hotel in Mexico City, and they meet with their handler Alex, and they go to the embassy. And at the embassy, Dalton. Dalton's freaking out because, by the way, he's already been accosted by the Russians, treated like shit, and like dumped out in the middle of nowhere.
Well, his drug paranoia is beginning to overcome his grasp of reality.
And clearly he's promising things that he can't deliver.
Well, that was in an effort to, I assume, extort more money. But he also had this back this kind of this backdoor kind of scheme where he was going to have the Russians transport drugs in their diplomatic pouches for him.
Yes. Yeah. He goes to the meeting where he's selling secrets to the Russians by saying, hey, I got this side project where I want you to transport heroin from Colombia or Peru or wherever up to Mexico, you know, in your diplomatic pouches. And the Russians are like, what the fuck?
You got to give him credit. I mean, it's kind of genius, but
sure.
Yeah, no.
They get sort of jacked up in the basement of the embassy, and Alex Poirot is he's basically telling Chris, because Chris is finally saying, look, I don't have these things you're looking for. I can't get them. I don't know what he promised you, but I don't have those things. Yeah. And I think I'm quitting my job, so sorry. And he's like, good, you should quit your job, and you should go to law school, and then you should get...
Go work for the CIA. You should
go work for the CIA so we can continue this relationship. Because they, you know, if you're in the, I don't know, the KGB, you probably are playing the long game, right?
Yeah.
So might as well. So Chris is like not interested in that. And they go down, they leave, and they're like, okay, we're done. And back at the airport, Dalton's freaking out and crying, and he doesn't know who his friends are anymore. And Christopher urges him to come back to the U.S. with him, but Dalton remains in Mexico. So back in his apartment in the U.S., Christopher packed up all of Lana's belongings and tells her to move out because he doesn't love her anymore. And Lana is so shocked, although you can't tell it from her expression because she is continues to be incredulous.
Go walk out the door.
Luckily, as long as she knows how to love, she'll survive. So back at RTX, Chris decides he's gonna pull a fast one on everybody. What? And he takes photographs of the Pyramider project, a defunct project that has little significance. He signs out of RTX as his last day of work, and he's got his documents, and he goes to his apartment to slink in and hide till he can go to Mexico. But he finds they're having a surprise party. So, bit of tension there.
This is actually one of the few parts of the movie that I was super tense at.
Oh, yeah.
Because the briefcase full of all the stuff that he's unlocked and left open, I'm like, oh.
Yep.
But this was the only part of the movie that I actually had any tension.
So, then later, Chris tells Dalton he wants to make one last delivery for $100,000. Their friends are agreed that they're finished after this last one. And, Dalton says, okay, you know, now that the Russians are just as paranoid as and manipulative as the Americans, because I guess maybe the thought was that the Russians would be like cooler heads or something, or more responsible than the Americans were.
Oh, no. They just wanted the technology so they could blow shit up first.
Well, I know. But see, to me, growing up in this era, you just assume that if we've got spies and Russians got spies, it's the same sort of game. So why would he think the Russians would be any more noble? Like, was his idea that if he gave the information about fooling around in other governments to the Russians would be just say, hey, look, America, see what you're doing? You're doing bad things. You should stop. And then they would, and then life would be a better place.
Yeah, I'm not realizing, though, that would jeopardize the pipeline of information, because very quickly the government would find out that there was a leak and they'd work to shut it down.
Exactly. In fact, having that information is more valuable the less you tell about it.
Exactly. It goes back to the point when code breakers break codes, they never tell anybody they've broken. You never tell the enemy you've broken their codes, ever. You don't want them to know.
Because you
want
to use those codes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, what was that news story I just read where the CIA, it was just released or whatever, that the CIA basically bought the European company that makes all the coding machines and has for the last like 40 years. So the CIA basically has had access to all the coding machines for every country in Europe for the last 40 years.
Oh, well, that's kind of smart.
Yeah, but it should be a surprise to no one, right?
No.
So, anyway, so Dalton goes to make this last drop. Although, again, he has burned his bridges with the Russians. The Russians are tired of Dalton. It's Chris or nobody. But Dalton has a sneaky way of, like, getting himself onto embassy property and into attending parties where he's talking to like other like world dignitaries. I mean, smaller country dignitaries, but still.
Yeah.
So he goes outside the Russian embassy and the embassy people are like, get the fuck out. We don't want to talk to you anymore. You're a jackass. So he decides to write something on a piece of paper about the documents that he has or something and throws it over the wall. At which point he is arrested by Mexican police for littering. And then it turns out they're charging him with the murder of a police officer. Now, was this presumably a setup that like the Russians set him up to be arrested by the Mexican police, or is this the Mexican police who just happened to arrest him?
It's never clear in the movie. It's completely unclear.
Yeah, he actually goes down to the Mexican jail. What a lot of people, Americans, at least because they're the people I know, but Americans don't realize that when you are in another country, you're no longer protected by the rights you hold as an American.
It's funny how that works.
Yeah, it is funny. Yeah, anyway, so he is getting the third degree, including the part of the third degree getting hit by phone books, which so it's to me, that's a classic touch. And they're going to like put him on trial for murder of a police officer and terrorism. And of course, his defense is, no, I'm a spy. Like, oh, huh. So. Eventually, he refuses to confess, which, by the way, is always good. Don't ever confess.
Yeah. Yeah, because in America, especially in America, because what you say will never be used to help you, it will only be used to hurt you.
Oh, yeah. Well, hey, and in some other countries, I'm thinking of you, Japan, they actually make you recreate the crime if you're on trial for a crime. They have you recreate what they think you did.
How does that work?
Well, that's what they will tell you to do. And it's not like a question of, here, show us what you did. It's do this, do this, do this, do this. Oh, well, we're videoing it all, by the way. And it will be played at the trial or whatever.
Huh.
So, yeah. It's, yeah. Yeah. Ask Amanda Knox. Some foreign countries' justice systems are different than ours.
Yes.
So, anyway. So he is eventually released by the Mexicans, but he has the choice of either being deported to America or to the Soviet Union. He chooses America.
Well, not initially.
No, well, yeah. Back in California, Christopher is trying to reach Dalton by phone at his hotel, and when another person answers the phone, Christopher gets progressively paranoid and upset. And so he decides to go to the airport. This is a quaint thing from the 70s, where you can go to an airport and buy a ticket on the same day and fly internationally.
Yeah.
To a country with no extradition. Like, I'd like to go to this country. Nope. Okay, how about this other one, 3,000 miles in the other direction? Well, sure. But he gets the heebies and the jeebies while he's in line. And he leaves the airport. He tracks down, by the way, he's driving the least inconspicuous car. So if there is anybody on his tail, yeah, I don't know what brand of car that was. It's a Jeep or something?
No, I think it was a Volkswagen, wasn't it?
Oh, maybe, yeah. Like a convertible. Yeah, but yeah, just not it was the Pontiac Aztec of the day.
It was the Volkswagen Thing.
Oh my God. Okay, so it is the Pontiac Aztec.
I was pretty sure it was a thing.
It's gross. It's a gross-looking car. Sorry, it does not appeal to my sensibilities. So he goes to Lana's job at the movie ticket booth and tells her that the police are going to ask her a lot of questions. He really does love her. And she responds by giving him that Mona Lisa incredulous look that she's been perfecting for the last part of the movie. We skip to Mexican officials dropping Dalton off at the border, where he is immediately apprehended by the U.S. Marshals. And Chris goes and takes his Falcon Fox, you know, like Guy Fox, to an open field. He removes her jessies and tells her she's free. I guess her jessies are maybe the leather bonds that, whatever, I don't know.
Okay.
Or maybe it's jesses, I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah,
Falcon reads some bullshit. Hey, and as a person that keeps a caged bird at his house, And there's, I'm sure, some people who are ethically opposed to that. It turns out birds are kind of awesome. I mean, birds are smart. Birds are live a long time, and birds like interaction with things. I get it, but still, keeping him like if I had to put my bird in a hood all the time to keep it from, I don't know, flying away and attacking Kirk Douglas's face. Kill. So we have this beautiful cinematic scene of him telling the Falcon to fly away, and he's in the field looking up at the sky, and around him are all those U.S. Marshal jeeps coming in his way to arrest him.
Did you know that there's an IMCDB?
Internet Movie...
Cars Database.
Oh, there you go. Nice. I bet you there's one for guns, too. Actually, I think there's also a punk movie, punk music and movies database called the IMCBGB.
The Volkswagen thing, type 181. Yeah.
Hey, was Timothy Dalton in Turk 187?
Was he?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Timothy Hutton, not Timothy Dalton. Timothy Dalton was James Bond. You know.
And it's Turk 182, I believe.
Oh, you're right. Thing 181.
What was... I don't even remember Turk 182. Let's see. Oh, it was Timothy Hutton.
Yeah.
Oh, Robert Ulrich. Kim Cattrall, really?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I remember that the movie. Again, that was another one that was on TV a lot.
Robert Culp, Paul Sorvino, Peter Boyle.
Put it on the list.
Wow.
By the way, did you see that one of the U.S. Marshals that takes Christopher down was Michael Ironsides?
No, I didn't notice.
Oh, it's hilarious, yeah. It's like, hey, I know that familiar face. He looks like he's going to beat the shit out of somebody. Yeah, sure enough.
Turk 182 was also 85.
Oh, Timothy Hutton had a big spread there too.
It does not have good reviews.
It's one of those things.
Anyway, sorry, digress.
Okay, so Chris goes willingly, and goes to the FBI thing, and he's composed and truthful, and his defense, I guess, is that he said what was once a legitimate intelligence gathering agency is now being misused to prey on weaker governments. Back at the Boyce home, Larry Rogers from RTX is talking about Christopher's case with Charlie Boyce, who tells Larry that he doesn't want any favors made for his son. So I think that's an appropriate thing to do with your dad. Say, no, guess what? Do the crime, do the time. And so in the last scene of the movie, Christopher and Dalton are in shackles, and they're brought from their sentencing. Their parents watch as they walk chained down the long hallway. And then we see images of the boys during their confirmation and high school graduation ceremonies. And then Fox flies free in a perfectly blue sky. Andrew Dalton Lee was found guilty and sentenced to life imprisonment. Christopher Boyce was found guilty and sentenced to 40 years imprisonment. So, I'm going to put like pin in this, because I will tell you what happens next.
Okay.
But first, this movie. You have notes.
It had a terrible 80s soundtrack. It was terrible. The oddest thing at the end was the David Bowie song at the end.
Yeah, it wasn't even a good David Bowie song.
No, it was bizarre. Let's see what it had. It had the total made-for-TV look, beer and tomato juice, which we discussed.
That's called something.
I think it was beer and Clamato, though.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah. Anyway, which is just repellent as far as I'm concerned. Margaritas through the shredder would be ugh. But also, I wrote that a young Sean Penn kind of looks like Patrick Dempsey.
I could see it. Yeah.
So that was the extent of my notes. This movie was, I don't know. It was probably maybe a C. Maybe, but I think that's pretty generous. The acting wasn't good, but I suspect that's because the writing wasn't good for this. The dialogue wasn't good. Nobody really had any chemistry, except that Sean Penn wasn't likable. He wasn't supposed to be.
Yeah, except that, okay, so Sean Penn, I would argue that Sean Penn is doing some actory stuff, right?
He is.
And Timothy Hutton is doing his best. It's fine. I mean, I think he's doing a fine job. It's just not great. All the character actors I love to see, they're doing fine. But they're doing no better than TV movie quality work, right?
Yeah.
But because I don't like Chris, and because I don't think that Dalton has, you don't have enough sympathy for Dalton, because I think the idea was that you would see Chris as something of a hero, maybe at least in his own mind, and Dalton as somebody who's kind of a fuck up, but otherwise, you know, Chris's best friend, so that's cool, and he's over his head, so that's sympathetic, and he's losing it. So, but I didn't find Chris at all likable, and I didn't find Dalton even worthy of much pity.
They're not sympathetic. They never make the case, either of them, for the good cause that they think that they're doing. They're trying to justify their existence and their actions, but there's never anything that has enough gravity to justify what they're doing. There's no rationalization that even makes sense.
No, exactly. So you want to hear what happened after?
Yeah.
So they both went to Lompoc prison, right? And on January 21st, 1980, Christopher Boyce escaped from Lompoc. And while he was a fugitive, Boyce carried out 17 bank robberies in Idaho and Washington.
Wow.
He was from the proceeds of these bank robberies, going to...
Oh, no.
Ostensibly, pay for passage to the Soviet Union, and he adopted the name of Anthony Edward Lester. He also studied aviation after he was captured, by the way. He said that he was not studying aviation to flee from the Soviet Union, but instead he was studying aviation so he could rescue Dalton from Lompoc. Dalton, by the way, had a little dim view of Christopher doing all this ostensibly for his benefit, and they didn't talk for a long time, partly because also Dalton got transferred to a different prison because of this whole thing.
No kidding.
So did Christopher. But so again, maybe it's another Dalton's taking a bullet for another one of Christopher's stupid things. But anyway, so on August 21st, 1981, Boyce was arrested while eating in his car outside the Pit Stop, a drive-in restaurant in Port Angeles, Washington. They had received a tip about Boyce's whereabouts from his former bank robbery confederates.
Honor among thieves.
No. So there is a lady named Kathleen Mills, who is an activist, who is working on getting Dalton released from prison. And after successfully arguing and getting him being released, remember, life sentence, but he was released on parole in 1998. Mm-hmm. Dalton never escaped. So that puts him as a better candidate for parole. So then after Kathleen Mills got Dalton freed, she pivoted to start working on Boyce's release. And eventually, Boyce was released from prison on parole in September 16, 2002, after serving a little over 25 years. Oh, yeah, and he married Kathleen Mills. She goes by Kate. So, in 2013, Boyce published a book titled American Sons, The Untold Story of the Falcon and the Snowman, which mainly discusses his time with prison and a relationship with his wife, Kate. And, let's see, I believe he lives in Oregon. He has renewed his pastime of falconry, and he has expressed support for Edward Snowden, exposing the information about the government's surveillance programs.
Oh. Okay. Yeah.
So, you get to write your own story, right? The story that you want to believe about your life. But this is another thing that when I found this out, I'm like, fuck that guy. And I guess this is me talking to the real Christopher Boyce. Whatever, you know, you're my elder, so and I didn't live your life. But you know what? You're not a hero. I'm glad you did the 25 years. So you're out on patrol. That's great. You get to live a free life. Fine by me. You did your time. But I don't like him. I don't respect him. And I don't give a fuck what he thinks about.
Yeah, there was no patriotism in what he did.
None.
Yeah. No, especially doing it for personal gain and to no positive end, ostensibly.
Exactly. And who knows? I mean, the way the story is portrayed, there wasn't really any consequence of the information that was given, partly because the big bulk of it was this Pyramider project, but still.
But we probably don't know what the damage was, because the intelligence community would never want that divulged.
Well, not only that, but even the existence of what telecommunication companies have the CIA contracts for, blah, 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 all of that is interesting information. So everything about it is worth putting in the intelligence folder for it, because again, those guys are paid on salary. So yeah, they'll take whatever you give them and at least put them in a file somewhere.
Yeah.
So yeah, anyway. So, I mean, I'm glad we talked about it, I think, because it was interesting to watch it, but I would not recommend this movie.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's not the movie that I was thinking of when I suggested it, so I'm going to have to search for the movie that I'm thinking of. So the movie I'm thinking of was Darker.
Yeah, well, there are a lot of movies that are in this category. Like, if you like this, you like this. And again, I like 3 Days of the Condor, better movie. Although it had its own problems.
I was going to say, marginally better, except that it was, you know, rapey, Munchausen-y, or Stockholm-y, I guess.
Yeah, you know, Robert Redford was charming.
He was charming rapey. Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah, but even, even Faye Dunaway was, she got some good lines in there. And Cliff Robertson was great.
The acting was much better in The Condor. You're right.
Yeah, and of course, Max von Sydow, fucking A.
Yeah,
there's a reason why he's a legendary actor.
He really was great. He's a great actor when he was alive.
It makes me want to watch more of his movies. Okay, so housekeeping.
I live in a city where everybody's panic buying.
Oh no. You, what you mean is you live in a city.
Yeah.
Because everybody's panic buying everywhere.
It's ridiculous. It's just, and boyfriend Jesse and I went to the grocery store this afternoon after work, and people are wearing masks, and it's ridiculous. Like, okay, you're wearing a mask, but you're touching, like, touchscreen computers.
Yeah.
Which everybody else is touching.
With this particular virus, you need to wear a mask and
goggles. Yeah, you're not wearing any goggles. It's just crazy. I can't buy fucking anything I need because, of course, everybody else is buying shit up. And I'm like, for God's sakes, people, just get it under control.
Yeah, it's like people are people and they're freaking out, which I get. You know, and you know what sucks? It sucks that people can't trust our government. To say fucking anything right. Like, I guess we're just so used to being lied to.
I can't fathom the people that think this is a big hoax.
Well, yeah, I mean, I get that it's probably, I mean, it's not going to kill, well, that's not true. It could kill a ton of people, but it's not going to be like the zombie apocalypse. But maybe people should follow the basic precautions.
Wash your damn filthy hands, people.
Yeah.
You know, I'm in a awkward position because I work in public health. So I don't have a choice but to deal with it because...
your job.
Yeah. So I'm in a weird position where, like, I don't have any extra knowledge.
Yeah.
But I have the ability to see other departments that I interact with. And I don't see them panicking, so I'm not panicked.
Yeah.
So when I see them start to panic, that's when I know the shit is hitting the fan. And they do, you know, there are ways that I can observe when the tension ratchets up. But for now, it's mostly like, you know, shelter in place. If you're sick, stay home. Wash your damn hands. Don't cough on people. But for God's sakes, stop shaking hands.
Yeah, simple enough. Stop shaking hands. Maybe cover your mouth when you cough. You nasty person.
Yeah, but other than that, it's just people are panic buying, like, you know, cases of water and hand sanitizer. By the way, hand sanitizer does fuck all, by the way.
Well, not only that, but people are telling people to make hand sanitizer on their own, except there's a little bit of chemistry and a little bit of math involved that means that you have to go out of your way to make hand sanitizer that even works as well as the over-the-counter kind, which, as you just pointed out, doesn't work super well.
Yeah. I mean, so, and I'm not an expert on hand sanitizer, but I can tell you, from what limited training that I've had, you have to keep your hands wet with hand sanitizer for 30 seconds for it to even be effective. Do you know how much hand sanitizer you have to use to keep your hands wet for 30 seconds?
People are doing a great business. Like, if you invested in Clorox a month ago, you're doing fine.
Yeah.
Also, naturopaths and essential oils and all these snake oil salesmen.
There's a special place in hell.
Yeah, it's not great.
But it's just frustrating, and people are panicking, and travel is stopping, which is fine, but it's just now I have to, it's funny to be in the office and hear people coughing and then other people like giving the stink eye, like, oh, somebody's coughing. Maybe you should go home. Like, maybe it's just the dust in this damn building.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's just people, wash your filthy hands, stay home if you're sick. Don't be a martyr. If you think you've got like weird symptoms, don't go anywhere. Call your doctor. Let them triage you over the phone, because probably what they're going to tell you is stay home.
Yeah. And granted, I mean, there are people that if they don't go to work, they don't get paid. So I get that. And but, you know, if you're legitimately sick, come on. You're doing it for us, too. I don't want to get sick. So it's complicated. But you know, did they just cancel South by Southwest, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's having some serious, well, and then the stock market's been crazy, but turns out the stock market is crazy because the stock market is just made up bullshit.
Yeah. I say the problem is we don't have a government we can trust to tell us the truth or actually have some goddamn leadership.
Although, you'll note that, except for, I guess, Tulsi Gabbard, who is technically still in the race, the youngest person running for president right now is Donald Trump.
Yeah. One way or another, we're going to have a 70-year-old in the White House.
Yeah. A 70-year-old white guy.
Yeah.
I guess vice presidential picks are going to mean something.
You think?
Yeah. So we'll see. Anyway, on other news, the biggest piece of housekeeping is that Jason and I tried to record this podcast last night, but the laptop I used to record the podcast had what is going to turn out to be a fatal video card problem. So I had to, luckily, first world problems. I have an old desktop that I have, it has now been conscripted into the service of the podcast, and it seems to be going well.
Yeah. We'll see. Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's it for me. No real big news. Spring break is next week, so I've got the week off. You and Jason are going to be talking about First Man.
Me and Drew.
I'm sorry, you and Drew. I mean the other Jason. So you and Journey are going to be talking about First Man. And you're for sure out on the Fast and Furious movies?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks.
Okay, that's fine. As long as you're cool with it, that works.
No, I'm beyond cool with it.
That's kind of how I feel about First Man. It's nice to have a week off, and it'll be fun to hear you guys talk about it.
So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on Films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on Films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you wanna catch an episode. They talk movies, they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's a brother Sanderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open in that case. We got Aaron, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.
Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. Hey.